TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Anant Giridharadas, Should Billionaires Exist? Are billionaires such as Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates the American dream personified? Do they reflect a healthy economy? Or, as Senator Bernie Sanders has said, should billionaires not exist in the first place? Anand Giridharadas, Time magazine editor-at-large and author of Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World, discusses why he agrees with Sanders. On December 9, 2019, Anand Giridharadas was Steve Paikin's guest on The Agenda. That's TV Ontario's renowned current affairs program.
Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have made no bones about going after the ultra-elite, mega-millionaires and billionaires. That's also the stomping grounds of our next guest. Anand Giridharadas is author most recently of Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. He is an editor-at-large for Time and a political analyst for MSNBC, and he joins us now for more. It's so good to have you back here.
Good to be back here.
I think it was 10 years ago you were on this program.
One of my first TV appearances ever.
Is that right? Let me read something that Matt Flegenheimer wrote in the New York Times back on November 8th. He wrote, "There is probably never a bad time to be a billionaire, but this at least is an especially complicated one. Across politics, technology, and popular culture, the wisdom and purpose of the extremely wealthy is being questioned as never before." Do you see this shift taking place?
Yes, and what was very interesting in that phrasing, I love that piece, the wisdom and purpose of these billionaires being questioned. What's so elegant in that phrase is it's questioning both the wisdom of the billionaires, as in their wisdom, but also the purpose of having billionaires as a society. Mm. Not just the billionaire's sense of their own purpose, but our sense of purpose in allowing fortunes like that to be amassed as a priority before we take care of priorities like making sure most people have the rudiments of a decent life. And over the last, 30 to 40 years in the United States, we have practiced a social model that is billionaire-friendly first. Allow people to run companies in ways that make as much money as possible by cutting every social corner imaginable, pay people as little as possible, pay as little as taxes as possible, use Caribbean islands to dodge things, use trusts, double Irish with a Dutch sandwich tax maneuver, and so on and so forth. Lobby in Washington for public policies, bottle service public policy that's just good for you and your friends, not good for the commons. And then what you get is a defanged government that's not able to do big things for people, multiplying social problems because of that defanged government and because of all the ways you're employing people, et cetera. And then billionaires coming along and CEOs and others coming along and saying, what a shame. What a shame. These festering social problems makes my heart hurt. And this government not able to solve it, that's a shame. Let me step up. I can fix it.
We have been talking, though, about the 1% ever since the Great Recession broke. So why do you think there's anything particularly different right now?
Well, first of all, movements take time to build. Right? There were Seattle protests in 1999. Mm-hmm. Occupy was in 2011. I think the financial crisis in 2008, 2009 had an enormous role in shattering not only opportunity, particularly for a lot of young people whose lives never were able to get off the ground then or since, but also shattering a certain mythology that the United States has practiced but also preached around the world. The mythology that the best society is achieved by leaving entrepreneurs alone. That if you do that one thing, all other good things flow.
On the face of it, it doesn't sound like a terribly dumb idea. You know, if you let the best and the brightest and smartest go out and do their thing, we'll have a better society. On the face of it.
Entrepreneurs are just one type of person in society pursuing one type of good, which is money and growth. You know, it turns out that what teachers do is not motivated by that kind of calculation and actually turns out to be really, really important to a civilized society. I'm sure someone as intelligent as you could make more money doing a whole bunch of things in the society, but you do what you do because the pursuit of the truth and that's fostering debate is a really important part of society. If we abandoned if people who went into medicine, if people who went into public service, if we abandon all of that because we just said, you know, the pursuit of money is a great end goal, I think we'd have a very impoverished society. And part of what has happened in the United States, and to varying degrees in other places, is as money became the lodestar, it became more than just the economy. It became the culture, to the point that in dating in America, people talk about optimization. Right? People use corporate jargon to discuss personal life. There's nothing that's beyond the realm of this kind of business thinking. And I wrote the book to question the idea that the very people who prosecuted this business revolution, this leave entrepreneurs alone revolution, can now miraculously reinvent themselves as the solution to the problems they have caused.
No, I appreciate that, but I do want to know how far you would go to... Well, let me put it this way. Bernie Sanders says billionaires should not exist. You prepare to go that far?
I think he's right. And I would say this. We have tried the other way for a while.
Which is leave them alone to do anything.
Right. Having billionaires. We've tried the having billionaires approach. And it turns out in the United States to be pretty inconsistent with the flourishing of most people. So I'm intellectually honest enough to say, let's try another approach, which is having a tax code and regulatory structure that would make it, you know, impossible or at least much harder to become a billionaire. And let's see what we get. If after 10 or 15 years of that, it turns out that's counterproductive and bad for most people, I'd be happy to come back on this show and advocate for the reinstatement of billionaires. But I think we should talk about the myth that has upheld the idea that it's good to have billionaires. The myth is that what's good for them is good for everybody else, right? It's the win-win ideology.
Does anybody believe that anymore?
I think people are starting to not believe it in droves, but it has been a defining myth of the last 40 years. And at the heart of the myth is this idea that if you just have business flourish, you have these people do whatever they want to do, everybody's welfare will increase. And I think what people are waking up to, and my own attempt to intervene in that discussion, is to say in certain moments in history, people are not down below because they have failed to join the people up above. They're down below because people up above are standing on their necks. And when you are in a situation like that in a society, the only solution to lifting people up is to actually stop people standing on their necks. And that's not going to happen with them voluntarily signing statements to have better behaved business. It's not going to happen through them giving one pair of shoes for every pair of shoes they sell to you. It's not going to happen through impact investing where you know, also factor in social returns. It's not going to happen through social enterprise or philanthropy. It's going to happen the old-fashioned way, which is democratically, which is putting business in its proper place in society through regulation, taxation, and policies and laws.
Is it immoral to be a billionaire?
I was called to the Oxford Union to engage in a debate about that. And, you know, the Oxford Union, I was told, is sort of famous for framing these debates in a way that favors the kind of conservative landed gentry side of the argument, because it is the Oxford Union. So I was, you know, asked to argue this it's immoral to be a billionaire position. And I argued that it is. It's probably a touch more strenuous claim than I would make. I think it's immoral for a society that allows you to be billionaires, as Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has said when asked that same question. Mm-hmm. But the reason I argued it is immoral to be a billionaire, it may be immoral to be a billionaire, is that if you are the beneficiary of a system that predictably, reliably, foreseeably favors your continued hoarding of resources, while most people are not able to have the rudiments of a decent life, and if you are not doing everything in your power to dismantle that system that you're standing on top of, you become complicit in that system. It doesn't mean that everybody who is a billionaire has, you know, is the same level of sinner. Mm. It doesn't mean that everybody's committed fraud to become a billionaire. There's a whole bunch of stories, right? And the wealth of the Sackler family, members of which are behind the opioid crisis in the United States, is really, really different from the wealth of Serena Williams, who's just really good at tennis. But both benefit from a set of societal arrangements that favor them in a way that I think if you are a responsible citizen, you have to spend your time fighting against.
I was wondering if you were going to make a hierarchy between those who sort of inherited their billions and those like Zuckerberg or Gates who actually went out and made it on their own. Do you make a distinction?
Well, it's a distinction that becomes complicated. I mean, if Gates is someone who made it on his own, he also, you know, happened to go to one of the only high schools in America with computers at that moment, which is not something that he did on his own. Mark Zuckerberg happened to be a white guy from upstate New York, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, his demographic is the only demographic generally who started some of these big tech companies.
I'm not saying they didn't have anything else going for them.
Right.
They clearly
but
did.
But I'm saying even the notion that they are self-made, which is their story,
right,
is complicated. We are all socially made. In addition to being self-made, we are all a mix of the socially and socially made and self-made. And I think part of what bothers me about the billionaire narrative of self-making is these are actually people who benefit more than most people from the high-quality structures and systems set up in a country like Canada or the United States, right? This is something people don't talk about. Like, a regular person benefits, you know, a regular amount from Canada or the United States or any other country having good courts and whatever. But if you own Facebook, you really, really benefit from the United States having one of the greatest court systems ever invented in the world. You really benefit way more than a regular person. You really benefit from the Securities and Exchange Commission being what it is relative to the one, its counterpart in, you know, Somalia. Like, if you are at Goldman Sachs, you may complain about regulation, but actually everything you are able to do and the trust you're able to have when you pick up a phone and place a trade is entirely based on these public systems. So these are people who benefit way more than average people from the regulatory infrastructure that we all pay for. And then they have the gall to turn around and malign that infrastructure that they so leverage and so use just in those moments when it is expensive for them. It's extremely ungrateful. And I think part of what I'm advocating people need to do is to offer the plutocrats of the world or of our countries a deal. Here's the cost of doing business in Canada or the United States of America. Here's the tax rate. Here's the minimum wage, right? We think we have a pretty great country here. If you disagree, if you want to take Facebook elsewhere, because our wealth tax that you don't like, no problem.
Well, let me put this to you. Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren has proposed a wealth tax, 2% on assets over $50 million, 3% on assets worth more than $1 billion. Billionaire investor Leon Cooperman wrote this in a letter to Elizabeth Warren in October. He wrote, however much it resonates with your base, your vilification of the rich is misguided, ignoring, among other things, the sources of their wealth and the substantial contributions to society, which they already, unprompted by you, make. Earlier in October, Cooperman said, I believe in a progressive income tax and the rich paying more, but this is the, we're a family program here, so I'm going to say, but this is the effing American dream she is shiting on. On November 5th, J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon said she uses some pretty harsh words. You know, some would say vilify successful people. I don't like vilifying anybody. I think we should applaud successful people. Okay, let's pull this apart a little bit here. The Warren wealth tax. What do you think, for starters?
Couple things. First of all, when Jamie Dimon contacted me to challenge some of my public comments on these kinds of issues, and he had no problem vilifying hardworking people when I suggested to him that a lot of workers are exploited in America by the CEOs that he admires and pals around with, and he said, no, some people just don't like to work. So he has no problem vilifying punching down. He just has apparently a problem with people vilifying billionaires. You know, if you think that a 3% tax only on those assets you have above a billion is vilification, you need to get out more. You may be living in such a cosseted cotton ball bubble that you actually don't even know what it means to have anybody tell you the truth. 3% is a lower percent than all these people make in their annual returns on capital, okay? She's literally not even going to make... I actually disagree with her plan in that sense.
You want it higher.
I actually don't think anybody's fortune would get smaller. Because now she's raised it to 6 because of her Medicare for All plan. So that could, but even 6, most of these people have a rate of return on capital that is in excess. So, you know, it's in the tens or teens in many cases. And so the idea that a person who is proposing to merely reduce the rate at which you continue to get richer than other people is vilifying you, you gotta get out more.
That was Anand Giridharadas, interviewed by Steve Paikin on his TV Ontario program, The Agenda. You heard an excerpt, and I'm guessing you're inspired to view the entire program on TVO's YouTube channel. That's TV Ontario. 2 months earlier, Anand Giridharadas had been the guest on The Daily Show. And here's another excerpt. The host, Trevor Noah, got into a fiery exchange with Giridharadas about his best-selling book, Winners Take All, and the paradox of elite philanthropy.
Welcome to The Daily Show.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a book that has made you the enemy of billionaires all over the world.
Right.
You are a foolish man.
Right.
Why would you write a book that basically accuses billionaires of being like fake good people as philanthropists? What does that even mean?
There was no good reason to do it, except that it was true. You know, we live in this time where you can't walk down the street in Manhattan or other parts of the country without bumping into a rich person trying to change the world, right? Mark Zuckerberg's trying to change the world. Elon Musk is going to try to change the world. Jeff Bezos changing the world. They're all changing the world. More money being given away than has ever been given away in the history of the world.
Right.
Young people, you know, elite graduates, elite campuses. We want to go to Africa, start a social enterprise, turning recycled poop into coffee.
Right.
with tote bags. Bono is involved.
Yes.
A red iPhone case you get for free. And the question is, why is it that this era of extraordinary elite generosity, which is real, happens to coincide with an age of extraordinary elite hoarding? The very same class of billionaires and plutocrats who do so much to give and constantly talk about how much they give have a monopoly on the future in this country. The 1% in this country takes 49% of new income.
Yeah.
Half the new income. And imagine if all the new income in this studio audience went to one person, right? Half of it. Imagine if another true statistic, the 0.1%, owns more wealth than the bottom 80% of people in this country.
Right.
The bottom half of people in this country on average have not gotten a raise, as many of you may know, in 40 years.
Right.
And so the question then becomes, what's the relationship between all this nice stuff elites do and this elite predation? And the relationship that I discovered when I reported this book, it's these nice deeds, this sprinkling of nice deeds that help us uphold a system in which rich people can monopolize the future, hoard progress, and kill the American dream. And not satisfied with that, they're trying to kill the planet now, too.
Okay, but let's go back on this. So you're saying the people hoard the money, all right? But now everyone here tries to keep the money that they make. I mean,
they're going to fight for their interests.
Okay.
The plutocrats are going to do what's good for plutocrats. You're right. The thing is, this is not feudal England. So we actually have systems that are designed to keep them in check. Because you're right. People are going to fight for their own interests.
Right.
And when you have people who have such vast fortunes that they have the power as monopolies to decide which way our elections go, which is a power Mark Zuckerberg frankly has, when you have people with so much power over consumers, you can't just say the hoarding impulse is going to be the hoarding impulse. You have to tax people properly. Taxes, taxes, taxes. You have to regulate people properly. You have to have a minimum wage that actually allows people who have no leverage against these billionaires to have the shared leverage that we all have, which is through a government negotiating for us. You know what the government is? The government is like a lawyer who represents all of us, right? And rich people are not all good or all bad the way you or me or anybody else is all good or all bad. But when rich people start to make money by underpaying people systemically, make money by, frankly, avoiding taxation in any way they can, hiding money, make money by employing people insecurely. You're a contractor, you work at Uber, but you don't really work at Uber. You do all of that. It's time for the advocate for all of us, the government, to actually fight on our behalf.
But now here's the thing. There are many billionaires, right? You say the elite charade of changing the world. But there are many billionaires who have come out publicly and said, hey, we should be paying more tax as billionaires. We want to be taxed higher. You know, like Warren Buffett has come out many times saying, guys, you know, my personal assistant pays a higher tax rate than I do, which is not fair. So if the billionaires are saying we should be paying more tax, then why would you say that it's a charade, or why do you say that, like, they're part of the problem?
Those billionaires are saying the right thing. Now, what is interesting, some of the people you mentioned, if you double-click on some of what they actually do in their life, what they do is they say, we should pay higher income tax. You know, they call their accountant immediately when they're off the CNBC air, and they say, hey, Bob, just make sure I have only wealth accumulation this year, capital gains, no income increase. Because you can do that when you're rich. You can just shuffle things around. And I think what we don't realize in this country, I mean, now we're heading into the election season, and we're starting to have a bunch of candidates who in various ways would at least gesture to what I'm talking about, right? Inequality is bad. We got to rebuild the middle class. But part of why I wrote the book and part of why I hope it's relevant as we head into the election is a lot of the people who sound similar when they're talking about fixing this problem are actually quite different. And I think of the book as a set of infrared lenses to actually understand who's peddling real change and who's peddling fake change. Because you look at people who say, gosh, we got to rebuild the middle class, but who also say, as Joe Biden did, you know, nothing's going to fundamentally change for the billionaires in this country. I just have to say, that is an incoherent, and I don't just mean rambling incoherent, but is an incoherent, intellectually incoherent theory. Because in this moment, I'm not saying all moments, but in this moment, the people up above are up above because they are stepping on people down below. And the people down below are down below because they are being stepped on. And you cannot say that I want to help the people down below in a way that will change nothing for the people standing on their necks. The same way you couldn't address feudal England, you couldn't address the Downton Abbey world without dealing with why the Granthams are the only people who own that damn castle, so big, right? You couldn't deal with slavery without making things worse for the white plantation owners. You can't, frankly, look at the Me Too world. You can't make things better for women in this world without, frankly, reducing the power of men to have impunity in so many of the spaces you and I and everybody else operate in. Right. Real change involves the loss of power.
That was Anand Giridharadas on The Daily Show on October 8, 2019. The Daily Show airs weeknights on Comedy Central. And you can see the full interview on their YouTube channel. And in closing, a nation brought to you by billionaires. In December 2018, Anand Giridharadas took the stage at In Your Face in New York City to present a list of corporate sponsors. And Giridharadas makes it very clear that the sponsors he is thanking are not those of the show, but those of all of America.
Warm greetings to you all. My name is Anand Giridharadas, which is Sanskrit for the one who will never go bald. It's wonderful to be at the celebration of New York. You know, I was born in Northeast Ohio, which is why growing up, my father referred to my sister and me as the original Cleveland Indians. It's true. As you probably know, gratitude is really big these days. And gratitude is my task tonight. I'm here to thank our sponsors, not of this show. I'm here to thank America's sponsors. Because what was supposed to be a republic by, for, and of the people is increasingly a nation brought to you by billionaires. And when billionaires are in charge of our schools, our politics, our arts, our news, and even our public conversation, it's important to keep them happy by thanking them for ruling us. I want to thank, firstly, our platinum-level sponsor, Mark Zuckerberg, a great philanthropist who couldn't be here tonight because he is busy atoning for making Donald Trump president. I just want to say of this great American giver, 50 billion buck Zuck, that it takes a special daring to pledge to get rid of all the diseases when your company itself is a plague on our democracy. And a shout out to Zuck's colleague and our diamond level sponsor, Sheryl Sandberg. Here's to your heroic work, showing millions of women that thousands of years of oppressive patriarchy, what they thought to be oppressive patriarchy, was in fact just mistaken posture. They were leaning at an incorrect angle. Now everything is fine. I also want to thank our brass level sponsor, Paul Tudor Jones. Paul is a big hedge fund manager here in New York. Some of you may have lost your jobs because of things he did to your company. And he helped start the Robin Hood Foundation, which takes money from the rich and stuffs it down poor people's mouths so they can't talk about how plutocrats have screwed them. I want to thank our uranium-level sponsor, the Clinton Global Initiative. Gotta love the Clinton Global Initiative. You know, peace be upon it. So many good works done. So much shady foreign money turned into one American electoral defeat. A big thank you as well to our Rose Gold level sponsor, the Sackler family. Without you, we wouldn't have so many wings in so many museums, including here in New York, the Brooklyn, the Guggenheim. And we probably also wouldn't have the opioid crisis, since the Sacklers made their money aggressively selling OxyContin. A hearty thank you to Chrome-level sponsors, Tom Steyer, Howard Schultz, and Mike Bloomberg. When the country's biggest problem is an arrogant billionaire president, it takes uncommon courage to think that the solution may be an arrogant billionaire president. I would like to thank our Sapphire-level sponsor as well, Goldman Sachs. We applaud your heroic work of mentorship in the 10,000 Women program, and we hope you create 1,000 more 10,000 Women programs so that you end up helping roughly as many people as you pummeled in the financial crisis. Thanks as well to our Mother of Pearl-level sponsor, Elon Musk. I just want to say, it is not easy these days being a rich white man with opinions about everything. Nevertheless, he persisted. And finally, I want to thank our Golden Toilet level sponsor, President Donald J. Trump. I am especially grateful to you, Mr. President, because until you came along, it wasn't as obvious to us as it should have been that we lived in a plutocracy. Before you came along, we had yet to see through our billionaire savior delusions. Before you came along, we still seemed to believe that rich people were going to change the world. I want to thank you, Mr. President, for demonstrating to us every day the illegitimacy of your rule and of billionaire rule more generally, and for lighting in us the spark of the new age of reform, of genuine democracy that is coming. The revolution will not be sponsored. Thank you very much.
That was Anand Giridharadas on stage at In Your Face in New York City on December 17, 2018. He had been invited to celebrate his acclaimed book, Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. Giridharadas offers a painstakingly researched analysis of a global elite who claim to be in the business of changing the world, while all the while preserving a status quo that favors their interests and obscures their role in causing the problems they later seek to solve. This was a collage of fair use excerpts from interviews with Anand Giridharadas. You can find the links to the full shows on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.